Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Speaking today with Gregor Wallbring. Gregor is founder and executive director of the International Center for Bioethics, Culture, and Disability. He's the founder and coordinator of the International Network on Bioethics and Disability, which is part of the International Association of Bioethics. He's also a biochemist at the Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology at the University of Calgary in Alberta, Canada. Finally, he's the founder and president of the International Association of Thalidomiders. Gregor will actually be a regular guest on Change Surfer Radio. We'll be having a monthly disability beat discussion on the show. You were born in Germany in the aftermath of the debacle with the use of thalidomide during pregnancy by many women in the Western world, which resulted in various alternative limb combinations and structures.
You learned from last time.
Yeah, I was going to say something which you would have jumped all over, but I caught myself. You in particular are a person without legs,
yes.
But many thalidomide people have shorter arms or alternative arms, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you have gotten involved in bioethics as a consequence of both being a scientist and a person with a bioethical, direct bioethical concern.
Mm-hmm.
It's fair to say that we came to some agreement, I think, last time that we didn't necessarily differ on a lot of these questions as long as people with disabilities were treated the same in every instance as people without disabilities. Is that right, do you think?
I can live with, when we're going back to a question whether we want to have something or not, but I can't, absolutely can't live with as if you're having a double morality based on certain characteristics, whether it's based on, okay, your color is different, so I can treat you differently, or you're shorter, therefore you are, and so on.
Right.
Right, and once we are dealing with everyone at least on the same level, then we can see where we as a society wants to go.
I think that the problem that I have with some of that is that I see ethical distinctions between, I think many people see ethical distinctions between disability and non-disability,
mm-hmm.
between not having legs and having legs, and a difference between that and being a female or a male, and some of the prenatal decision-making questions that we were addressing. You were saying, you know, if people don't see a problem with choosing against people with disabilities, but see a problem with choosing against gender, then you have a problem with that. I think most people see an ethical distinction between those two.
Yeah, of course, because they're all brought up in a certain prejudiced system, which indeed sees the difference between sexism and ableism, but it doesn't mean that they're right.
Mm.
I mean, there was a time when people saw a difference between racism and sexism, and there was a time there were where people saw a difference between, I mean, sexism wasn't that bad, but I mean, in the beginning of last centuries, I mean, women were still discriminated, other issues were not discriminated. So this is a cultural reflection of where we went, or how far we went in the social structure of acceptance. And, you know, different times you had different groups you singled out for, okay, they're treated differently. That doesn't make it right.
We also addressed the topic of shouldn't we have a social policy to reduce the incidence of disability? And I think this is one of the places where many disabled people, non-disabled people, don't understand each other. Can you summarize the argument for why we shouldn't have a policy to reduce the amount of disability in society?
First, I think we have to define again what a disability is. I mean, there's a difference between a metabolic, real-time, deadly kind of defect like Tay-Sachs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you die. But that's different to, for example, whether you have legs or not. This is not a metabolic, real-time kind of problem. You're just different. I think it's just the exclusive view of we need a medical cure for, we need artificial legs for you or we need that for them and totally ignore the rest of it. And that's the problem I have. Because it really, I mean, limits our options of, I mean, how we see people. If I'm getting boiled down to, okay, you have no legs, so that's the only thing which counts with you. And therefore, and we define your legs as a deficiency, therefore we have to fix it within a technological framework. Therefore, we totally ignore all the other stuff, what you are and what leads to the problem. Because having no legs per se is not the problem. I can't do certain things and some other people can't do other things. But my problems come mostly from how I get treated. I mean, every time when people look at me with a pitiful approach, or look like this guy has to crawl on the floor, This is what's causing me the trouble, not that I can't walk. And I think that is different from an acute metabolic failure. And I think people just, because disability is by now, it's like a synonym for everything which we don't want to have, which is not fitting the norm. We just label it disability within a medical framework or technological framework, and then we deal with the people only within that framework. There's no differentiation, nothing anymore. Right, and I think that's a problem. I mean, in the long run, because eventually, with new technologies out there, and of the diagnostic, and eventually interventions, I mean, everyone, you could label every single person like a disease, a defect. Right, I mean, especially when you have the enhancements, all by a sudden, I mean, people who are so far the norm would be, I mean, the defect. Right.
Yeah.
This is what you call and what I call normative creep or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And so people have to understand these kind of things. I think people are too much separated from the reality. They just see, okay, this is a disability, this is a disease, these are these people. And I think they don't see the societal structure in which they all live. I think it's too simplistic. And so often I think the cure has to be a societal reevaluation of how we deal with each other and not necessarily just a techno or a medical cure. And that's, I think, I don't even think we are too far away from that. I mean, we too. I mean, transhumanists want a cure for their defective body, period, right? So obviously they have the same thing. They see that, okay, biological body can't do certain things, period.
One of the arguments that's been made by transhumanists is the argument for morphological freedom, or that we should all have the right to have the different kinds of bodies that we want.
Yeah.
And for most non-disabled people, that would mean having abilities greater than the human.
Exactly.
And, for disabled people, that would mean choosing between whatever state they're in now and a variety of other options, but also hopefully accepting that some people might make a choice to not necessarily adopt whatever the morphology of everybody else was.
Exactly, and I think you actually, as transhumanists, need that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if everyone, then eventually this new morphological freedom becomes a morphological obligation, right?
Right.
This is where the crux of the matter is. I mean, if you want to have, like, a technology develop which where you can walk as fast as a car can drive, so you don't have to actually buy a car because you are as fast as, good for you if you want that in some ways. But if that becomes then, okay, no, therefore, because this is like leading, makes the Western culture more productive or more competitive and so on, therefore this becomes now the norm and so everyone else has to do the same thing. That's, I think, where then the problem is. And I think our society, unfortunately, is not very good in accepting differences. I mean, because Western culture is so warped up in this competitive issue that I have the fear that this morphological freedom will become the morphological obligation. And I think actually the transhumanists, if they want to actually get where they want, they have to actually fight that one, because all the so far norm people will fight this to the heels, because they don't want to become all of a sudden morphological deficient, because there's something better out there. That's why I think a lot of people still resist the enhancement over curing people to the norm.
Let's talk for a second about Christopher Reeves. He's become quite the American icon spokesman, perhaps international spokesman, for the vision that some disabled folks have, people in wheelchairs have, that they may be able to benefit from the advancement of technology and eventually walk again.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that some folks in the disability community have also gotten upset at the focus and the attention that he's gotten for that message.
Yes.
Could you articulate a little bit of that?
Okay. One thing first, when people comment on Christopher Reeves, I mean, for the most part, this is not the person Christopher Reeves they're blaming. People have to understand that. I think Christopher didn't really have much of a choice. I mean, he went into an accident, he came out of it, and there already these big forces are lining up to use him for their purposes. he had really no time to get used to what he is. And we know human beings, I mean, getting in essence, we need a lot of time to get actually used to new beings. I mean, like, if you're getting divorced, you're going to rebound because you would like to go back to where you were before. I mean, this is not something which shouldn't be humans doing. There are studies out there who say if you're getting into an accident, becoming a quadriplegic, you need roughly 7 years to get used to your new being. And he never had that time to reflect on that. Now, the disability community has a problem because it's Christopher Reeve obviously was used to push for medical, technological advances, and it was like, okay, if you want to walk again, you have to support embryonic stem cell research, which then might lead eventually, we don't know, but we hope, to a solution that you can walk again. So what you're doing is you're putting a carrot in front of them, and you keep them emotional hostages. You have to support this technology, otherwise you will never walk again. In the same time, these are the same companies who are doing nothing to support the American with Disability Act, right, which is the human rights framework of disability. The American with Disability Act is under continuous like siege to be dismantled and cut down, not further, I mean, made better. So this is the dichotomy. I mean, as long as you can use disabled people to force and to get your medical agenda passed, that's fine. But in the same way, you're totally, the same groups ignoring totally the societal consequences people are live in. And if you would do a lot to make their life better, a lot of them might actually say, okay, I don't want actually want to walk again. I want to have a decent life now. But it's a little bit like the Catholic Church in earlier times. It was like, oh, well, we don't have to do anything for you now on this earth if you're poor and whatever, because there will be heaven eventually. Right? And I'm more a guy for freedom theology, that I have an obligation to do something for people now, as they live now, and do something which changes things for them now, and not all the time puts them on a hope trip, and therefore we need your help so that we can eventually do that. And I think that's what the people had a problem with Christopher Reeves, because they want to have something which makes their life better now, and there are many things you can do to make their life better now. Instead of, this all gets deflected to a, in the future, maybe techno trip, where so far there's no indication that actually the embryonic stem cell, for example, would work. Right? I mean, they're giving, I mean, hope to, people who can't walk, I mean, through spinal injury for decades and saying, this is the new technology, you support this, and very likely it can work. And I think that's where the problem comes. I don't think it's with the thing with Christopher, but it's like, it deflects again from doing something now over some, nicht in favor of we might do something in the future. And of course, the thing in the future is where they can make money from embryonic stem cells. But employing actually disabled people and adapting their companies so they can actually employ them costs them money.
Let's kick it up a notch to cochlear implants. Deaf community has, some people in the deaf community have objected to the idea that their children should take advantage of a technology which allows them to hear speech, not extremely well, but hear some speech, and thereby adapt without having to live in a sign language community.
Yeah.
What's the argument against kids adapting to hearing world through cochlear implants?
Okay, I think there are two issues. I mean, you have two groups within the deaf community. One who sees themselves still as a defect, right? And these are mostly the ones who are hard of hearing and developed like their hearing loss later. And then you have the ones, I mean, who see deaf as a culture, where sign language is a language as is English or French or whatever. Now, if you are part of that culture, if you believe like, okay, there's a deaf culture, then obviously giving cochlear implants is equal to genocide, because you take their kid away from the culture in which they think they live. Because once they hear, they might lose their connection to the movement. In some ways, they are like, if you're having like a marriage between like different races, I mean, they are not accepted by both groups. And someone with a cochlear implant is somewhere similar. I mean, you are still not good for the hearing, so you're still seen quite badly by them, but you're also starting to lose your acceptance within the deaf culture community. So in essence, you are in the middle, and you don't belong to any of these groups anymore. I think that's why some have a problem, and especially as cochlear implants so far do not work very well to start with. And I think attached to that is really a clash between cultures, whether you really think deaf is a disease or whether that you think deaf is a, right, a culture, a different way of being. And just today, I think, there was an article in the Australian in newspapers where deaf people, where hearing people trying to use IVF to test for a deaf gene to make sure that their kid won't be deaf, which means that we will use pre-implantation diagnostic to weed out the embryo which has the mutation for the connexin 26 gene, and therefore they think they can ensure that their kid would be hearing because they would only choose the embryo who wouldn't have that particular so-called defect in the gene. So this is, I think, a clash of cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Between the ones who see it as just a different way of being. And the problem is that it's all subjective. It's very hard to draw a line. Like, for example, John Harris says very clearly he finds deaf is a disease, and therefore you should eliminate deafness wherever you can. But in the same way, he says achondroplasia, which is like being a dwarf, is not a disease. Right? Not a defect.
Mm-hmm.
But of course we have, I mean, also a lot of, like, I mean, 100% actually of the obstetricians in Australia believe that if you should test for dwarfism, and then terminate the pregnancy. So, and then other people, of course, would say, how can it be if you're short? I mean, why is that a disease? But if you're like Michael Jordan, you're tall, you're making $1 billion money. Right? Mm. I mean, this is all subjective. What characteristics we put into the out and in what in the in kind of category. And that makes the whole process of legal frameworks very difficult, because there's no way you get a consent in society, because every single condition will have, people will have a diverse views on, even with sex selection. I mean, it's not a unanimous vote against sex selection. Obviously, in India, we use sex selection much more than we would use it in North America. So it's, again, culturally based. And that's the problem. So the legal system will not help you, because what drives these kind of technologies is the cultural framework. If you devalue a certain group, then yeah, sure, you use a technology which makes sure that you can get rid of this devalued characteristic. And that's a cultural, I mean, this is really a cultural fight. And that's where the cochlear implants come in, or even artificial legs. Right? I mean, there are two ways to see artificial legs. I mean, obviously, I could have used them. I actually used them as a kid. And I had to use them in university because they simply didn't allow my wheelchair in the lab. Right? So I was actually forced to use legs. But the question is whether the legs are a tool to give me some morphological freedom, right, to do things I want to do. But they are only one option I can use of many. I can crawl, I can walk, I mean, I can use legs, I can do wheelchair, I can do whatever. Or whether they are there to, in essence, to enforce on me a certain normalcy principle of what the society says you have to be. And then they will say, crawling is evil or bad, wheelchair is a confinement, but legs, here's your liberation. And depending on how you sell that tool, right, you make me feel good or bad about it. And in the moment, I feel very bad about artificial legs, because they're not sold as an option to me, but they're sold as the solution over everything else to me.
You were talking a second ago about the genetic tests for deafness.
Yeah.
Do you think it's possible for genetic counselors to be truly non-directive?
No. I mean, you can see, I mean, the report I was for the German Parliament on these issues, there are buckets of studies out there which show that genetic counselors are, in essence, directive counseling. I mean, different countries more, different, in some countries more, some less, and the directive counseling depends on for what you counsel, right? The more, I mean, because even the counselors have certain judgments of what is severe, what is not severe. Mm-hmm. And the more severe they see themselves a condition, the more directive they counsel. Furthermore, I mean, it's non-directive counseling is necessary, would be more than just to give you, okay, I give you all the facts out there. Because the facts by themselves are already directing. Right? If the fact is, okay, you will not be able to go to school because the school system doesn't allow for disability. The fact is that you might be forced into a murder-suicide like we had now in Vancouver because the government doesn't give you support of money and you feel you're so desperate with your kid that you actually kill yourself and your kid. If this is the facts out there, that by itself directs, of course, the family already in a certain direction, even if the counselor would just give you all the facts which are out there. Right, so I don't think that non-directive counseling is a concept which would work.
Mm. And finally, let's tackle one more before we go. By the way, I'm speaking with Dr. Gregor Wallbring. He's the founder and director of the International Center for Bioethics, Culture, and Disability in Calgary, Canada, and is disabled himself, and the director of the International Association of Bioethics Working Group on Bioethics and Disability. I think, again, these issues all get raised with physician-assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us who on the more libertarian side of American bioethics would argue that physician-assisted suicide for those who choose it, it mm-hmm. should be an option, and many people in the bioethics community see a covert euthanistic agenda in the physician-assisted suicide. Do you think that it's possible to have physician-assisted suicide regimes, such as the Dutch regime, that are not discriminatory or do not encourage, disproportionately encourage the disabled to commit suicide?
Okay, I actually don't believe in the Dutch system. Because but the question is, again, for whom? And, I mean, the reality is normally you start with the so-called terminal illness. Then you're moving, and the Dutch done that, into incurable illness. Now, that's, of course, very problematic. Incurable means, like, I'm incurable, right? Because if you see me as a disease or defect, I never be cured because I will never way I get normal legs, so-called normal legs. So I'm part of their category. But if you would then, for example, say, okay, shouldn't we give, like, physician-assisted suicide to a prisoner? Which actually is a real thing in the U.S. because you still have the death penalty, right? And the prisoner says, I don't want to be 30 years in prison. I rather want to be dead. Then it's American Civil Liberties Union and others who strongly say that a prisoner should not have the right to physician-assisted suicide. Now, I again say, if we debate this issue, it has to be, do we want as a society the access to physician-assisted suicide, period? And not, again, singling out, like, terminal illness or incurable illness or disability because this you can sell, right? I mean, it has to be for everyone or for no one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, my beef with the debate around it. It, again, singled some groups out where you can ensure public sympathy because that group is so devalued that, I mean, because, hey, isn't that so bad to have Lou Gehrig's disease? I mean, you're really better off dead. And then you can sell that kind of technology to the people. And that's, I think, it's an unfair approach. I mean, if you want to do it, then do it for the right reason. Say, we as a society should have the right to decide whenever we want to die, and we should have the right to a dignified death, meaning that I can go to a pharmacy, get the pills, whatever. But not, again, single out some group because, you know, you can actually sell it to the people. And that's my beef with the debate. And then once we really go for the all or nothing, then the society has to decide whether they can build enough safeguards. Right, but to, I mean, use for other people, for non-disabled people or non-diseased, non-defect people, suicide prevention programs, and then for disability, do the suicide enhancement program, and we have to give you the right to do that. I think that's, I mean, that's not right.
Gregor, where can people go to get more information about disability and bioethics?
Okay, my webpage would be one. Shameless self-promotion here.
Please.
It's www.bioethicsanddisability.org. It's all one word, /.org. And there they can find all kind of issues over nanotech, over transhumanism, over euthanasia. And I should also say, genetic and euthanasia are one part. I mean, my biggest problem in society is that there seems to be a generic non-involvement of disabled people in nearly all kind of policy issues besides the ones they really attach to disability like access, right? I mean, for example, the Durham World Conference on Xenophobia did not involve disabled people, or now the Sustainable Development Conference in Johannesburg doesn't involve disabled people, and so on. And as long as these groups don't become part of mainstream society, that they are really part of that, right? I mean, of everything we think of, I think they will be all the time in the danger of being singled out for special treatment. And I think it's in some ways it's good that you have transhumanist disabled people now, but you have to be very careful how that whole thing shapes up. I mean, we didn't go into the personhood debate yet.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
Right. I mean, there's so many issues to it. It's not a black and white thing. It's not like you can do accounting. Also nowadays you're wondering whether accounting works so well. But it's not like a black and white issue. There's so much more involved to it than just right or wrong, because what is right and wrong often depends so much on the societal structure in which it takes place. And I really hope that people start to really involve more disabled people in every single issue, because on every single issue there is a disability angle. Even something like water, right, which people would say, what is their big deal with what is their disability angle? But disabled people, especially in developing countries, have much more problems with access to clean water and so on, based on their living situation. The majority of food stamp recipients in the U.S. are so-called disabled people. Right, so hunger is actually indeed a disability issue and so on, because and that's what I hope eventually will happen, that, I mean, you really involve them as part of the movement, like the G8 meeting didn't move. I mean, the anti-G8 gathering, which was not here in Calgary, so I know about it, didn't involve disabled people, but globalization is a disability issue.
Mm.
Right, I mean, they are in every single country disabled people.
Gregor, we'll have to have you back again. Yeah, you'll become a regular. I've been speaking with Gregor Wahlbring. He's the director of the International Association of Bioethics and Disability, Network of Bioethics and Disability, and you can find him online at bioethicsanddisability.org. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I every time I enjoy talking with you.
Me too. Okay. Talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about today's show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. At the Change Surfer website, you can find past and future shows archived in streaming MP3, thanks to the Infos Radio Project. Also, at www.changesurfer.com are instructions on how to order copies of our shows and myriad relevant links. So educate, agitate, and organize, and I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.